Hi friends, hello the world. Welcome back to the episode of Tools for Transitioning Humanitarians and your host, the Seller Monarch. Today I want to talk about the topic that I believe is one of the heaviest to bear as a humanitarian, and that topic is scapegoating. And I want to divide it into two parts of this topic because I feel like it's going to be a long thing if I put both together and maybe a bit confusing as well. So that's why I really want to talk about in this episode about people who are being scapegoated, right? So in other words, if you are affected by that scapegoating. And then in the next episode, I want to talk about those who are scapegoating other people and how to recognize and what to do and those type of things, right? So that's why today I want to talk about scapegoating, specifically what it is, and give you examples of how I have experienced and people who I coach have experienced, and then talk about how they feel when they are being scapegoated, so that if you know someone that you want to support, or if you feel like this is your experience as well, you know that you're not alone. And then what to do, and most importantly, what not to do. And I think this is such a critical topic of what not to do, which I think we don't really talk about it. So that's what I will touch upon this. So let's start first with the definition of scapegoating. Now, there might be maybe official definition somewhere, but it's essentially what I have seen from the experience of how scapegoating in the humanitarian sector can look like is where someone is being accused of or blamed, and there's a distinction, and I will discuss that in a minute, blamed or accused of things going wrong and making that person responsible for it, right? Instead of making the system responsible for it, we somehow tend to choose the weaker link in the system and blame or accuse someone of wrongdoing. That is when scapegoating happens. And I have seen this happen on the organization-wide or in a mission-wide or duty station-wide. But I have also seen on a very smaller team-wide level of scapegoating. And the examples that I can talk about is the examples that I have seen, and also I heard from coaching other humanitarians, is some of the examples might be where a new management comes in and they don't want to be responsible for all the things going wrong, end quote, right? All the things that were not done improperly, maybe it was emergency, maybe it was a post-emergency, but it was a long time since that someone tenured in that mission, and then the new person comes in and they ask the auditors, they ask other investigation, or maybe they even ask like specific claims they make against a particular leader. And then they do the scapegoating in that way, which may not even sound like a scapegoating from the maybe organizational perspective, but for the person affected, it will very much feel like scapegoating, right? So making one person responsible for everything that has gone wrong in that operation. But I have also seen and heard like on a smaller level, on a team level, or on an office level, a scapegoating where the person is still in that environment and everyone else believes that the problem, why the office does not function, the why the team does not function well, is because of that person. And they just feel like if this person wasn't there, all of our problems will be solved, type of thing, right? And it may also happen, which is oftentimes, is when humanitarians are leaving the mission, and then it becomes so easy for everyone who is left behind to say that, well, that person did this, so it was all their fault. Or incoming person who may also do that is the new person comes in, and then they say that, well, all of the things that you have done is wrong, And the reason why we've all done this wrong is because someone else interpreted wrongly, right? So therefore, it can happen in various different ways. So the way that I have seen most of the time is the scapegoating is where larger part or majority of the organization or majority of the team is blaming or accusing one particular person or staff member. Now, the reason why I wanted to distinguish between blame and accusation is the way that I have seen is done is where accusation is used more when an official investigation has done into a case versus blame is where a lot of colleagues might be just blaming one particular person without making any official complaints against that person, or maybe even they have, but in the meantime, they just feel like they want to emotionally outburst their dissatisfaction with the other person, which is essentially a blame, right? So that is a distinguishing factor that I have seen. Now, obviously, in every operation or in every organization, we try to be in line with our principles, with our policies, and there are also measures for claiming justice, right? There are measures for when someone is doing actually a wrongdoing versus it's a false accusation or false blame, right? So there are a lot of like due processes in place, except that due processes may not always work or may not always be trusted by others, or due processes is not maybe understood as well. So maybe some people don't know what a misconduct is or a conduct that is against the rules, right? And I have seen also that scapegoating often happens in contexts where, if it's a very clear-cut misconduct, meaning that, let's say, someone stole a money or someone was involved in corrupt behaviors, then it's, let's say, not easy but easier, but it's clear-cut in terms of what to do. But when it comes to how a manager behaved in a particular way or a staff member behaved in a particular way, that's very difficult to gather evidence against, or it just becomes such a difficult and tense environment that we then start interpreting as toxic environment, right? And therefore, I think one of the things maybe we're not really talking about in this context is how much this affects the person who we are accusing, right? So let's say that we are collectively accusing a particular staff member, whether that person's nice or not is a different story, but let's say that's what we're doing. And I think oftentimes we're not really aware of how that affects that staff member, especially when it is a collective thing, right? And I wanted to just highlight some of the ways that I have seen in my own experience. I have seen coaching other clients' experience, how this makes that person feel. And on the human level, we need to understand that. Maybe as a professional, we have certain standards and we want people to hold that standard, or whatever our belief about how the other person is responsible for all the things going wrong, even though I don't believe that that should ever come to that, and it should never come to a collective blame of someone and ignoring the due process, or not even doing the due process, or keep adding more problems to the due process that's going on. I don't think that's ever going to help anyone in that environment yet. Us being human, I guess we get involved in such behaviors as well. But I think what I thought was so useful today to talk about first how someone who is going through and being affected as and being scapegoated, how they feel, how this affects their lives. And then also, if you feel like that's you and your experience currently, and you are being affected and you are being scapegoated, I would love to share some of the insights of what has worked in terms of what to do and not to do. Okay. So I have here my list of things that I have written down because I didn't want to forget some of the ways that I have seen and also heard from clients talking about this topic. So one of the main things that obviously affects them is them feeling so angry or so fearful of what's going on, and they feel like they lose sleep over this. They keep overthinking about it. They keep wanting to fight back, but not really knowing how to do that. They don't trust the system. They feel very devastated, disappointed that the system that they worked hard for so many years is treating them this way, right? And they feel a lot of powerlessness in this situation. And also, they feel like they are being punished really for doing all of their best to deliver aid or to do whatever the thing that was necessary to get the emergency going, to get the response going. They feel they're not only they're rewarded for doing all of that hard work, but they're actually being punished for it. And that obviously makes us so demotivated if it's us in that scapegoated place, right? And it would be so demotivating. It would be so much so that they cannot even function in the organization or in the position. They may take sick leaves, and some of the people that I have seen as my colleagues who were in this situation, they were on very extensive leave because they were taking care of their medical situation because they felt sick. They felt sick in ways that they hadn't experienced themselves before. And the sickness was for up to a year or even more. So you can imagine how much this impacts a human being, right? And always like think about it. If it was you in that role, how much it would impact you. And I think that's really like on a human level, we need to understand when we are being scapegoated, we need to understand how the impact would be devastating. And this would be not only devastating for that person that is being scapegoated, but for everyone around that person, right? The person who is affected, like feeling all of those emotions, trying to fight back, but not knowing how to, and not trusting the system, trying to recover the reputation that they feel they have ruined, like this situation has ruined their reputation, right? Trying to also wanting to get out and feeling like they can't really get out. They are in such a nightmare, a turmoil. And this is the treatment coming from the place that they have loved and cherished and dedicated their lives to doing this work. And then if they get treated this way, imagine how this would feel on them and on the people around them. Now, think about the people who are around these people, right? Often team members, or maybe colleagues, or maybe supervisees, maybe supervisors. Right. So if those people are seeing the scapegoating, what do you think they're going to make their conclusions of? They're going to make their conclusions about how we should do the bare minimum. Right. They may make their conclusions about how you should just not create any trouble or not question or not do anything that's going to come back and bite at you. They're going to think that they need to just get away from that environment as quickly as possible and go home and not deal with any of this. They will feel they don't want to, they are not motivated. They will feel that all of the results of the hard work, if it turns out this way in the punishment form, then why even bother? And that's how we kill the whole environment, by scapegoating one person. And I will talk more about how this might be something that we're doing currently as a collective. I will talk about that in the second series or part of this episode. But I really want to now come back to talking about if this is you who are affected by scapegoating. Here is what I would love to suggest to you, that you could do. And first, Let me just share how much I feel you and how much I feel you as a person who has been in the situation, as a person who has witnessed the situation. And unfortunately, in some of the ways, maybe I have also been involved in blaming others. And I really, knowing all of this now, that I really want to say I am sorry that you're going through this. And here is what I would love to share as to what has worked with myself, with the clients that I have coached, and what are the things not to do. So one of the first things is obviously allowing yourself to sleep and rest and take care of yourself emotionally, and especially processing whatever emotions come up every day, every minute, however long it is the priority, I would say, because whatever the emotions we don't acknowledge and allow and process through, they end up creating a lot of health problems later, which we do not want to bear the consequences of, right? So that's why taking care of yourself first is an absolute priority. With some of my clients, I joke about how taking care of yourself is a sacred activity that you need to be doing. Excuse me. Especially in situations like this where you feel like the whole world hates you or something, and I can feel you, hear you. And one of the ways that we can really get ourselves to a more grounded place is first allowing ourselves to sleep or whatever our body needs, our mind needs, meditating, journaling, all of those things that you feel that's useful or helpful to you, absolutely go for it and do this. Now, the second thing that I think is something that many of us don't do is we don't really sit down and sort out which of the accusations or which of the blame is our thing really, and which of the ones is not, and we shouldn't even sit and indulge in them. And this is a very hard thing to do, especially when our brain wants to fight against that injustice, right? Or especially when our brain just wants to shut down everything and then go away and do nothing or be disappointed at the world and then leave to the village and never come back, which used to be my thing. I used to think, okay, I'm just gonna leave and go to my village in Kyrgyzstan and never come out. And realizing, of course, that's not long term what I wanted to do, but right in that moment, these are the crazy ideas that come. But instead of like going so much in the two extremes of either wanting to fight or going to like hide or do nothing type of thing, or keep ignoring, what if we just sat down once we feel more grounded and feeling okay about ourselves and our fear brain is not taking charge, right? In that moment, what if we sat down and sit together and like even write it out for yourself? And if you can do that with someone else, amazing as well. And write it out as to, okay, what are the things that I believe is true from the accusations that is happening? And what are the ones that is not true and has nothing to do with me? And I don't want to entertain that. So oftentimes, for example, that I have seen people talk, like think about, or there is a tendency of, oh my God, everything is my fault, I ruined it. Or another version is, I have nothing to do with it, I'm being wrongly accused, and which might be the case as well, right? So that's why, like sitting down for yourself, being really clear about what is it that you want to take responsibility for and what is it that you do not want to take responsibility for, and not even think about it. Now, the next thing, the third thing, which is a very important decision that you may not be able to make in the beginning, especially when you are being scapegoated in the beginning. This decision you may not be able to do. So that's why, if you feel like you are not really sure, maybe it's wise not to make a decision about this. And the decision about how a lot of people that I've seen and I coach, They really think about, oh, I want to fight. I want to go against the organization or against this person, against this whoever, and then I want to fight. And as much as I love our ability and our sense of wanting to fight for justice, which I think is a very human and especially humanitarian thing to do, but we need to be always mindful of whether we are emotionally ready, emotionally resourceful to do that until the end. And this is here where I'm talking from my own experience, is that I have tried to fight justice when things were where I was the one who was scapegoated. I tried to fight for justice and to realize that I was so emotionally exhausted. And not only that, but also I wasn't even sure by the end if I want to even do that, because I was struggling with my health situation, right? I was struggling with my health situation, and I just felt like, was it even worth doing all of this? And I don't want people to find out that answer to that question when they have damaged a lot, or they put everything at stake, and then in the end, things didn't happen the way they thought it would be, or they couldn't go all the way until the end, because they're so struggling with their health conditions. And I think I always feel like, okay, someone needs to talk about asking the question and answering the question of, is it worth it? And maybe later down the line, you will find the answer. When you feel resourceful, you'll find the answer to say, yes, it is worth it. But in the beginning, or in the peak of the situation going on, ask yourself, is that really the case? Or you're just doing it because of the adrenaline rush, or because you just feel like otherwise you are a coward, or you are this, you are that. And then, like, even if, let's say, you have proven that you can fight for justice, but what about the all the health implications on your life? And what about the people who are around you who also need you or want you to be healthy and to be with them? And what about those people, right? So that's why I think about it. And if there is a way that you don't want to make a decision, it's okay to don't make a decision. Now, I would love to talk about what are the things not to do. And I feel like this is a bit of a longer list, but let's see how we can go through this. So, one of the first things that I would always suggest to people is, when this thing happens, when we are being scapegoated, oftentimes what we're going to do, we're going to overthink things, ruminate so much, indulge in it, talk to everyone, or like the people that we trust, of course, right? But talk to so many people about this, and then keep spiraling back and back into how this is wrong, how it's unfair, how it's not right, how we should do something about it, and then keep being in this turmoil. And now, as I said, from my experience, I totally hear you, but at the same time, I believe that is okay maybe in the first two rounds or the first 2 days of this situation occurring. But I don't think we should continue spiraling that way, because it's not going to help us. It's not going to help anyone. And especially if it's not going to bring justice that we are so craving. So that's why, when you notice yourself that you're overthinking, that you are ruminating, that you are all over the place, that you are wanting to talk to your loved ones about it all of the time, and then do they just feel like, this is just getting overboard now? Or maybe they're also hyped up and they're making you even more hyped up, and then you feel like you just want to burn everything, right? In those moments, like, notice that, or bring your awareness to observing how you are doing this. Like, I always think about, oh, I see that my brain wants to dramatize about this so much. And I feel so entitled and righteous about how what I'm saying is right in all of this, except that all of this is generating a lot of negative energy within me. And not only that, I'm not getting to any action on it. And even if I do do something from this energy of overthinking, ruminating, entitled, righteous, and all of this place, what I'm going to do is I'm going to attack them, or I'm going to do something that damages my reputation even more, or whatever it is. So it's not helpful at all. So that's why I would love to suggest that after getting the steam out first, then think about what do you want to do? Meaning, do you want to indulge in this a lot of the time and then let it dominate your life experience? Or you want to do this in some of the hours and then in others, do other things that are important to you. So that's why it's important that you don't let that experience be so powerful that it overruns everything else, right? That's the least we want to do. Now, the next thing is don't keep telling yourself you're stuck. And I think this is something that oftentimes also people tell me is that, well, if I could, I would leave tomorrow. Or if I could, I don't even want to go to work anymore. I don't want to work with those people or whatever their anger is about. But at the same time, they just keep feeling like, but I can't. I can't leave it because I have dues to pay, or I can't leave it because my children are still in school and I want to afford them better education, right? I can't leave because I have invested and sacrificed all of my life and now I'm leaving, right? Whatever your reasons might be, when you keep telling yourself this, what happens is that you are creating a lot of additional negative energy. So you are already indulging and feeling righteous and entitled, all of those feelings that are like being unfairly treated, all of those emotions are so high up. Now you're putting another wall that says, but you can't leave. And then what you make yourself in that moment feel is like a hostage of the situation. You feel like literally you are creating within your mind and heart a prison that you cannot get out of yourself as if. And then what that makes it even worse is when you exacerbate the situation that is already very bad, you exacerbate it on top. And now what you are not doing in that moment is actually thinking about what alternatives you can have, or what alternatives you want to seek for, what alternatives you want to build. Maybe it's time finally to think about plan B. Maybe it's time to create more resources. Maybe it's time for you to think about how to go to a next duty station or a different duty station, whatever it is. Maybe it is time for you to also think through things about, is this what you want or not? Is this aligned with who you are now or not? Is this really what you want to keep doing long term? Or do you just keep telling yourself that you're stuck or you cannot leave and then exacerbating your situation, right? And that's not useful at all. It's a bit like the analogy maybe is like someone falling from the bike, from the motorcycle and getting injured so badly, and then another car coming in hitting you. And this actually happened recently in Kyrgyzstan, and I was just so shocked by not only the person getting injured and hurt and the other car coming in hitting that person and then smashing that person even further, right? And I feel like when we keep telling ourselves that we are stuck now, we cannot do anything, we are powerless, we are this, we are that, we're just exacerbating the already difficult situation. So don't do that. And the other point is, and this is absolutely depending on your situation and how confident or how good you feel to do this, is thinking about what will be the way for you to address and solve the situation as a professional. What will be the way that you want to do your ways instead of just wanting to blame them, wanting to go and get back at them, what are the ways that your way of solving things would be, and how would you approach that? And in that context, I also hear a lot of people tell me about how their reputation is ruined and how they cannot restore this reputation. And oftentimes I hear the sense of the only way to restore reputation is getting back at them. But think about it. How will that help? How will that help you restore your reputation by acting the way that you are hating them to act, right? So why would you act that way? And what would that help you get at? Because I think oftentimes it's this is really what our hurt feeling does, is we want to do the same thing that they're doing to us, except that we know that that's going to get us even more trouble. And do we really want that? And if we don't want that, as hard as it may feel, this is a time where we decide, how do I want to approach this problem? How do I want to contribute to solving this my way? Not the way they're doing it, which I'm hating, but my way. How is that going to look? And then really sitting and thinking about it. And as I said, this is a very hard thing to do, but it is a possible thing to do. And the last one is on the don't do section, is don't get defensive or giving in to fear or keep saying like, oh my God, that's true. All of this my fault, all of these things, or all of these things. Don't say this to anyone else in the office or in the team or whatever until you have thought this through. Right? So if you want, you can even write things down and talk to someone who is not affected by the situation. Maybe it is your loved one, maybe it is your friend, maybe it is your coach, whoever it is. Write this down and then talk this through with them and ask them, is this sounding defensive or is this sounding like giving in to fear? Is this sounding like, yeah, you're right and I'm wrong and I'm sorry? And of course, you can always say that, but do you want to say that, or are you just at the effect of fear and giving in to fear, right? So that's why take time to really think through things and discuss it with someone who's not involved, who is very partial, to say, okay, how does it sound if I want to go and solve this problem, or if I want to contribute to solving it, this is what I would like to say, but I don't want to also sound like defensive or like telling everyone, oh, that's not my fault, and don't blame me, please, and not getting into that, but rather being very constructive about what is it that I want, so that everyone knows my part of the story, right? So, my dears, I have talked about, again, all the things that I have experienced and I have coached my clients on, and what has worked, what are the things not to do. I hope this was useful. I would love to hear your feedback on this. If you want me to address any of the specific topics you have in this context or any context because of which you are wanting to transition, absolutely come coach with me. I would love to help you think things through before making a powerful decision. So that's why come coach me, and in the meantime, have a beautiful week.